You're listening to psychiatrist Dr. Michael Aronoff on Doctor Radio, Sirius XM 81.
And we are back. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. We are talking about anger and its affiliated, complicating issues that come up for all of us. We all have to deal with it one way or another. I mean, anger, it's part of the repertoire we all have in terms of our emotions and so forth. One of the things that we had talked about, Dr. Betsy Sher-Levy, my guest here in the studio, and I had talked about off the air, was the stabbing that happened in school and how often anger and hatred are sort of suffused, mixed together. And, you know, if you want to talk about that, we can get to that. Our number is 1-877-698-3627, but we have a number of people who've been waiting patiently to speak and to share with us their thoughts, concerns, questions, and so forth. So let's go there first. And let's go to Anna from New York. Anna, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, does anger cannot lead to depression?
Can anger lead to depression?
Yes.
Well, this is a big topic. We are prepared to talk about that, but I am prepared to ask you a question first, Anna. Why are you asking that?
Well, the last 4 years of my life haven't been great.
Yeah.
And I know life is, it's not a silver line. It's up and down, but anything that could be thrown at me has been. And now it's time for me to pull my boots up and just get back out in the world, because I was taking care of my dad at home, and I don't have to do that anymore, but I gave up.
What do you mean you don't have to do that? He passed away?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to
so
hear that.
So sorry.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was a blessing that I got to bring him home. I got 6 months at home with him.
And you were able to give him some care and concern during that period of time.
I gave him everything he wanted. He was born at home, and that's where he wanted to leave. And I was able to do that for him.
Oh, my goodness.
That's beautiful.
That's very, very moving, yeah. Why don't you, Betsy, let's talk a little bit about the question that Anna, who was obviously feeling depression,
yes,
feeling burdened and overwhelmed to some extent, does that anger, the relationship between anger and depression?
Yes. Anna, you asked one of the most important questions that can be asked that so many people don't have either the strength to face or completely understand, which is, when you live with angry feelings that have really no place to be discharged or released or held or shared or worked with, discussed, you name it, inevitably what happens to the human psyche is we hold on to those angry feelings, we turn them inward instead of externalizing them, and let's hope if we do externalize them, it's always in a safe and not violent way. But when we internalize those angry feelings, we tend to get more and more depressed, dysthymic, despondent, hopeless. We don't have as much capacity for pleasure. In fact, you might be able to tell us whether you have a change in appetite or a change in sleep or a change in your energy or concentration levels, your typical symptomatology for the onset of a depressive episode or syndrome. But yes, to answer your question, anger is directly related to depression, particularly for those who find no healthy outlet and discharge for the angry feelings. And as you say, life's thrown a lot at you in 4 years. That would be when these cumulative effects happen. And I would encourage you, if you feel the depression is getting significant, to reach out for some help. Friends, community centers, support systems, if you've been at home alone taking care of your dad, and I'm sure you'll fill Dr. Aronoff and I in about the rest, then certainly you need some help. But thanks for the terrific question, and again, my condolences.
Anna, let me think about it this way, Anna. You've been bombarded for a long period of time. And I'm not saying this because, oh, poor Anna. I'm saying because life has thrown you a number of curveballs, and you've been fielding them for a period of time. And the feeling of, you know, how much more can I take? How is there a light at the end of the tunnel? I said that, yeah, I used that before. Think about it that way. If you're so overwhelmed by that kind of burden, of course you're going to get angry. That's one of the possible responses. It's an intrusion. It's you have a sense of, I'm not running my own life. I'm enslaved by other kinds of circumstances. That can lead to, if there's no avenue for resolving that, you turn it inward and you just, like a turtle, just come inside your shell. And I think about depression in that way. So what have you tried to do about it?
Well, my sleeping in the past 3 weeks, if I get up at 5 and if I don't take a break between 2 and 3 and I go straight to sleep, I'm up at 3 for the day.
Okay, I don't know if this is related directly, but it certainly a sleep problem may be a significant sign of a depressive process going on. And then the sleep problem can be either difficulty going to sleep, difficulty staying asleep, or too early awakening. So any one of those three can be a manifestation, because sleep, you know, when your guard, when your psychological guard is down, all those inner demons, all the inner kinds of pressures that you've been experiencing rise to the surface. And if you're up, the wheels will start churning. I'm sure that that's what happens. I mean, if you're up at 3 o'clock and you can't get back to sleep, the wheels are churning. You're trying to get back to sleep, but you can't do it. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What I do is I make a list.
Uh-oh. You know what? That's like counting sheep.
That's,
you know,
right.
You shouldn't count sleep in order to get to sleep, because if you're trying to get to sleep and you're counting sheep, you're not trying to get to sleep.
You're counting sheep.
Right. So the fact is, any kind of distraction, any kind of even soothing white noise, or any kind of, you know, even the kind of practice that people who meditate do.
That's right.
And that is put themselves in a state, almost like a trance state, of something that's comforting and soothing. And trying to stay there. It takes some time to practice that kind of thing, because your mind goes drifting off. But it can be very useful as well. What else? What about your appetite?
Well, I've gone from being really picky about what I eat, but definitely more healthy.
Yeah.
Naturally this happens. It's kind of weird.
Well, but okay.
But that's a plus.
Yeah, that's a plus.
If there's any plus, that might be one.
What about social interaction or involved with other people? What I'm doing is I'm going down the list of the kinds of things we look at that would be an indication that something's gone awry, that, you know, gives you some idea that you should address it.
You know, I'm not, basically not a social person, but I pushed myself out last Friday morning to go to this family breakfast for somebody's birthday. And surprisingly, I made it through. I will say I was glad when it was over and I could go back home, but I made it through like 2 hours.
Can I tell you something, Anna? Congratulations.
Yeah,
I think that's a very, very positive thing, and you need to do more of that sort of thing. So appetite is okay. What about exercise or physical activity?
Well, that's where my dog wins out. When I'm feeling stressed, he gets 2 walks a day instead of one.
That's great.
That's good. That's good. So, Anna, you have incorporated into your bag of tricks some very constructive things that you're doing. What's missing for you now?
Peacefulness.
You're not peaceful. Are you anxious?
Unbelievable. And how I work that is I'm going through the house bit by bit, room by room, inch by inch, and if it doesn't have a place, it's getting donated, thrown out.
So you're clearing the decks. You're clearing things out.
You're cleansing.
And that relaxes me.
Okay. Has that kind of organization and structure always relaxed you, or is it related to your dad and his passing in the home?
Probably relate to that because it was very hard to go through his stuff.
Yep.
Because he has the receipt to his to a fence he bought in 1942.
Oh, my God. He was a saver, huh?
You could imagine what we went through paper by paper, which to me was pretty emotional. There's some stuff you can keep and some stuff you don't have to keep.
Anna, who's the we? Who did you go through this with?
With my daughter, who's 24,
mm-hmm.
who gave up her social life, her schooling, to help me with my dad. She was the night crew. I was the day crew.
Well, that needs to be changed because
cannot,
you know, to cast no disrespect on anybody and the wonderful participation and the shared mother-daughter aspect of things. She has to reclaim aspects of her own life, as you do too. And that I think is what's feeding the kind of what you call the depression. I think the anger is just the burden of what's happened before that. I think the depression, you know, look, again, I don't know you, Anna, but I think the depression is because of the loss,
absolutely.
The significant loss that you've sustained. This is you can deal with this. You know what's going to help? I think you've got to get out of the shell. And I think that this is really, I mean, you hear us often say, you know, you ought to talk to somebody, but I think you need to talk to a neutral person who deals with grief and loss. I think that what you're doing is you're having a grief reaction.
Absolutely.
That is masked in a way. It presents as many other things, but it is a grief reaction. And this, you need to talk it out with somebody. And not with your daughter or not with somebody in the family, because, you know, you're going to be talking about that with them in any case. You need this personally for yourself.
And keep an eye on that, making sure your daughter reclaims her life as well, so she doesn't begin to suffer from the same kinds of depression if she hasn't already.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Anne.
What I said to my daughter is he's gone now. It took her like 3 months to get used to being up during the day after he left. So I said, okay, you're 24. You need to get on with your life, and I need to get on with my life, and it's going to take some time.
Good for you.
For both of you, but you're absolutely 100% correct.
Absolutely.
Anna,
but I said it to her. I said, you need.
Good.
You're done.
Good.
You did what you could do.
That's right.
Good. All right, Anna, I think you're underway. I think that what you're experiencing is just...
Very normal.
You know, yes, it is normal. Thank you for the call, Anna. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. That's 1-877-NYU-DOCS. Let's go back to Kelly. Kelly, you're there again?
I am.
Oh, listen to how clear
back.
You are. Listen to how clear you are.
She took a swim.
Yeah.
tell us
again... What's your question?
So I have a 14-year-old, but when she was younger, she's very shy outside of the home. But at home, I think she saves it all up for us and very much a bully to her siblings.
Older siblings or younger? Older or younger?
She has a younger sister and an older brother, so very, very disrespectful to her younger sister and to me. And I don't realize how shy she is, but we were away on vacation last week, and seeing how she is outside of the home and with strangers and how shy she really is, it always is surprising because of the way she is at home.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, just that anger, and it did remind me when you were talking about the caged animal. I think maybe just being so uncomfortable in social settings, and then you just have all that built up inside to take out on us.
Well, it sounds like it's a little more than just that, but I just want to remind everybody that Kelly had called during our last half hour, and we lost her due to the electronic miracles of today, and she's back again sharing with us the concern about her 14-year-old who was shy, who is a bully at home or very problematic at home, And you added there were some other problems in terms of her acting out sexually and with drugs outside the house as well.
And so,
tell us about that.
So now she's in high school, and I have found evidence through her backpack and her brother that, you know, there's some drug activity going on, and you know, some sexual promiscuity going on. I don't think, you know, I'm not sure exactly to what degree.
How is her brother? How is her brother apprised of this information?
Just because he's 2 years older than she is, and so he hears through the grapevine. And I really don't try to use him as a source
because I don't
want to ruin their relationship.
Right, of course.
And but it's more that he recently came to me and said, you know, you need to do something. You know, it's really getting out of hand. And it's so surprising that someone who is so shy, usually only had one friend at a time, and now, you know, this is like a new aspect. But I'm, you know, and I guess my real question is, I do feel like there's a insecurity and a confidence problem, and how do you get them to talk to someone? Because I've brought it up, and she said, you know, you think there's something wrong with me, and, you know, she's just completely offended.
Well, of course, the answer to her question about you think there's something wrong with me, the answer is, of course, yes. We know there's something wrong, but it's the question of how to deal with that, and that is not Betsy, I mean, you must see this all the time.
Yes, I do see this all the time, Kelly, and it's got to be one of the more challenging things to deal with, because adolescents are so vulnerable and yet very manipulative and very powerful. But it does sound like your daughter is very insecure and has been suffering, because, you see, if you have to be so controlling and the bully at home and you feel no power in the external world, you're profoundly withdrawn and shy, well, then at home you can, you know, take over. You become a person. But what about when you step out of the house? Maybe at home she's actually more controlling and abusive than she would even like to be. But when she walks out of the house, she feels almost powerless and so afraid and vulnerable. My concern is with the onset of adolescence and the hormones and the psychological volatility and ambivalence, that now the way she expresses herself in the community is a more dangerous one, promiscuous sexual activity and drug activity. What you would like to see there is a peer group. Adolescents should be replacing that attachment to the family with the peer group. And when you say she's so exquisitely shy, well, there is no peer group. So what's becoming the peer group is sort of, you know, sex and men and rock and roll and drugs. And that's a very dangerous displacement for the family and the peer group.
How many times have we heard the story?
Too many, Michael.
Of a girl.
I was going to say this explains it perfectly. Where do we go from here?
That's next. You know what? We're not hanging up yet on you, Kelly. We're just trying to
take a deep breath.
That's right. Okay. We're laying the groundwork. That's all. But the fact is, we hear all the time, particularly during that transition when preteens and teens are going through a sense of finding themselves, of trying to deal with who they are and their own self-esteem, that feeling shy or feeling that they make a spectacle of themselves, whether it's sexually, whether it's with drugs, whether it's with some sort of bad behavior display, in order to ease the sense of discomfort that they have within themselves. Having established that, we now need to go on to what to do next. And by the way, it does sound to me, not to sound too much of an alarm, that your daughter is on the extreme end of this kind of transition that many adolescents go through. Wouldn't you agree?
I absolutely agree, which is why I would not, you know, with some of my patients, Kelly, I say, let's watch it. Let's see what adolescent development brings, and we'll make A, B, and C modification inside and outside the home and see. But here, I'm hesitant to say that to you. If she says, Mom, you think there's something wrong with me? And as Dr. Aronoff says, he says, say yes. Yes, mm-hmm. sweetie, because I don't think that you're comfortable. You don't seem happy. I don't believe the happier, healthier you would be making the choices you're making.
Betsy, I agree with you, and I would improve on what I had said by what you're saying. Not so much that I think there's something wrong with you, but you're obviously not happy. And, you know,
healthy, and not
you're not doing healthy things. And this is what I'm concerned about. And by the way, I don't think her older brother is exempt from being called into action here. Not that it's his responsibility, but he has quite courageously sounded an alarm as well.
And which means he's really concerned if he didn't keep it quiet.
And the school as well could be concerned. And the fact is, I think the first step may be to consult, to respect her privacy, of course, but to consult with the school saying, we're concerned about this. What resources do you have available? What do you suggest?
So I did, at one point, I did go to the school.
Excellent.
What did they say? I had found drugs in her backpack, and I didn't know what they were because I don't know what things
are.
Right. And so I spoke to a counselor. And it turned out to be marijuana. It was, like, made up into some kind of a cereal thing, but whatever. So then they had called her down to talk to a, you know, crisis counselor, and she never said a word. She, you know, would not even respond to this woman. And so because I would like to have her talk to someone, but I'm thinking, you know, if she's just going to sit there and not say a word, that's not really helping.
Well, it could be that the school environment, she feels like she'll be too, quote, punished and exposed in front of the teachers, faculty, and peer group. You may then want to see someone more privately who's not involved with her teachers and her peers and those evaluating her. And there you want to find someone with whom she can connect. And I promise you that even the shyest of teenagers who are acting out in the most dangerous ways and either bullying at home or saying nothing on the outside world can make the connection. If they have enough of a well-developed ego, they can make a connection that may help them. It takes time and it takes effort. Believe me, they don't walk in and say, nice to meet you, I'm so happy to be here and talk about my problems. But our job is to help them to find a way to stay and make healthier judgments and find a healthier self. And by you making this phone call and your son speaking with you and you going to the school, you've already begun her process to health. But it's a long journey, and don't stop. I admire you, but don't stop.
So I'm going to start with, you don't seem happy, and you're doing things that are dangerous to your health, and so I would like for you
And Kelly, just be prepared for, oh, Ma, you don't know what you're talking about.
Everybody smokes pot.
Yeah, but the fact is, I want you to rest assured, Kelly, that smoking pot, you can argue about the politics of it, you know, and so forth now, but it is absolutely psychologically dangerous at this particular age, in my judgment. No question about it. I'll argue with anybody about this and give you details about why I justify that particular stance. So, number one, you're on the right side. You're on the side of the angels with regard to that. She is an adolescent, a preteen in turmoil.
Yes.
You're not going
to... And that's how I feel. But I'm just so... I feel so powerless. But I don't want the talking to someone to seem like punishment. But yet, I really do want to force her to go.
So the issue is, Yeah. It's a very difficult.
Very difficult.
You can't force them. You want to lead the, you know, you can't, you want to lead the horse to water.
But you can't make it drink.
Right.
You can offer to go with her. You can say, I'll stay in the room as long as you'd like me to, or I won't stay in the room at all. I'll go have a coffee. You can say, we'll go to the movies afterwards. You can say, sweetheart, I love you enough, and I know you're in pain, and it's hard. Sometimes I have to be a mom, and I have to be a good mom. That's my job. My job right now is to get you help.
She doesn't feel like she's in pain. She feels like, you know, you know, that everything is
yeah, and
you,
know, you can and you
great.
Can say
she's
and you can say that Keller
or...
Kelly, you can say that to her, that I know you don't feel like you're in pain, but I want to tell you something. If I see somebody running toward the edge of a cliff and they say there's no edge to the cliff, I know that I'm right and they're wrong.
Right.
So you know that she's in pain because of the kind of acting out. Right now, look, if she's acting out sexually and she's getting attention from boys, you know, the scuzziest boys in the world, she's feeling she's getting attention, but that's no good. That's no good
14.
For her. And you know that. I don't need to tell you this.
It's a scuzzy crowd. It is definitely a scuzzy crowd.
She doesn't have the self-confidence to think she can be in any other crowd right now.
Right.
Which is why you owe her really the help. So she can think better of herself and make better choices.
So Kelly, look, you're obviously on the right track.
Right.
And we hear, you know, I mentioned before about the school shootings and so forth. And you hear all the time in the news afterwards, well, we never saw it coming. Or, you know,
that's
it was perfectly.
Right.
And the fact is, what you're doing is we see something coming.
That's right.
You're doing
Right. I had an appointment made with a psychologist, and then I canceled it because I wasn't sure how to get her to go. But I feel like now I at least have some words to get her there.
Yeah, okay.
I love the cliff. It's very, you know, good visual.
Okay, good. Kelly, thanks for calling
back.
Kelly. Good luck with this, okay? Take care. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. We're going to take a break shortly, but let's go to Ryan. Ryan from California, you're on the air. Thanks for hanging on, Ryan. What's on your mind?
Okay, thank you for taking my call, first of all.
Sure,
our pleasure.
You know, that's why they pay us the big bucks. Yeah.
Well, here's my situation. My wife and I are expecting our second child very soon. With our first son, I had an issue with my temper, where, especially when he was a newborn, where I felt that I would lose my temper if in situations where he would be crying or, you know, when it was, you know, very difficult to take care of him.
A newborn crying? That's unheard of. Ryan, So,
but I mean, I feel that the temper is not just me getting angry. Like, I would express it almost physically, not towards the baby, of course, but, you know, it would get to the point where I would just totally lose it.
Well, what do you mean by angry? It's hard for me to conceive. I can understand feeling burdened, feeling disgusted. Oh, no, not again. But angry? Please explain a little bit more about that.
Sure. I mean, it's almost like a rage. That would be the best way to describe it, where I get to the point where I'm getting so upset, so angry, that I will, you know, just totally lose control. And, like, I would set the baby down in another room and go and, you know, scream my head off and punch the bed and just totally lose it.
Yeah, go ahead, Betsy.
Did you feel that the baby was at risk when he was with you? If you guys were alone, were you afraid that you would hurt him?
No, not actually. I mean, I think that is sort of that's a generalized fear.
Uh huh.
But I would never act on that towards the baby at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, that wasn't a concern.
You mean you might leave the room and he might be neglected, so to speak, but you would take your anger outside elsewhere, punch the wall, punch the bed, kind of thing. And was your wife aware of this?
Oh, yeah, she was aware.
And what would she do?
Well, I mean, this was usually a situation where, you know, I would let her out of the house for a couple hours.
Oh, you were left alone with the baby.
Right.
Oh, okay. The plot thickens here. Now, let me just ask you a couple of other things. You put it in the past tense. Is this still going on with this with your newborn?
Well, I mean, now he's a toddler.
He's the yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not having as much difficulty. You know, there's not the crying. Now it's temper tantrums with him.
Well, where do you think he learned that, with all due respect, Ryan?
They say like father, like son, perhaps, yeah. In this case. Are you are you most afraid you're going to do this again with the birth of your second child coming up?
That's it. And that's really the purpose of my call, is to figure out some ways to avoid this and some strategies that I can work on with myself to control that.
So let me understand. Let us understand. These get triggered by you being the sole custodian and feeling overwhelmed. Is that fair to say?
That's fairly accurate, yes.
Fairly accurate. Is there some other issue that should be added to that picture?
No, that's 100%.
Okay, fairly accurate. By fairly accurate, you mean 100%. Okay, I can go with that. So tell me something, Ryan. Tell me about how you were raised. I mean, were you raised as this perfect, pristine individual, not impacted by the demands of the world around you, of living, of responsibility, and so forth?
That's an interesting question. I feel like I was raised to be like the perfect son.
Oh, and already your newborn was not perfect.
Okay, yes.
And the next one might not be either.
Yeah, no, let me guarantee the next one's not. No, guaranteed.
Right.
Because, and let me guarantee something else without knowing you very well, Ryan. You weren't the perfect son.
Oh, I know.
All right, so.
I also feel that, like, since I was an adolescent, I had a problem with the temper.
Okay.
I also feel that, of course, my father had a problem with his temper as well.
All right. So aside from the genetic or at least the experience of growing up with somebody with a temper problem, the issue is what it is that triggers your temper. That's what you really have to identify. And the fact is we're sort of playing around with the possibility that feeling out of control or being judged as less than perfect is something that you're very, very uncomfortable with, putting it mildly, and that, quite frankly, pisses you off. And
right.
You don't like that.
And if there's any person that you can't control, it's certainly a newborn who's cranky and colicky and hungry and sleepy. That's really a challenge for someone who needs control, as are the terrible twos and temper tantrums. So the question is, what are your strategies? Because you can't control their crying.
No. I mean, I did, after I discussed this with my wife, I went and I spoke to a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And
what were you told?
Really,
what were you told?
It was more of like just try to avoid getting to that point where I would, you know, feel like I was totally out of control. If I was able to detect myself getting there, then just remove myself from the situation.
Well, I'm not so sure that I agree with that. You know, in principle, maybe it's okay, but in practice, you know, you're driving along the highway and your infant bothers you. You're not going to dump your infant out on the side of the road and move
right.
on. You know, so
right.
That's not exactly the way to approach it. I think that what you need to do under these circumstances is you need to look into yourself. You are not responsible to being perfect under these circumstances, and to enjoy the imperfection. It's the first time in your life you'd allow yourself to do that. Bask in it. Have a good time with the fact that, you know, stuff isn't so neat. It's not so terrible. It might be an interesting experiment for you to try. Ryan, we got to take a break. You want to hold on for a few minutes?
Oh, you know, I think that's a good starting point, Doctor.
Good. Okay. Yeah. Goodbye, Ryan.
Terrific. Good luck with your son and the birth.
Yeah. I'm probably going to need it, but I appreciate you answering my call. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, okay. Ryan. Thank you for the call. Our number is 1-877-698-3627. Those of you on the phone, hang in there. We'll be back after a brief break.
This is Dr. Radio, Sirius XM 81, and on the Sirius XM app for smartphones.
I like to listen to the music a little bit, but we are back. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. This is the Psychiatry Show, live every Tuesday from noon to 2. In studio with me is my guest, Dr. Betsy Sher Levy, licensed clinical psychologist here in New York, lectures and teaches as well in New York, deals with couples, adults, adolescents, children, what have you, with regard to a whole spectrum of psychiatric and psychological issues.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm very glad to have you, Betsy. These issues are challenging. We're talking about anger and the various manifestations of it, but not limiting ourselves just to that. But let's go back to the phones to those people who have been very diligently hanging on. Nancy from Michigan. Nancy, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Nancy. What's on your mind?
I have a daughter. I'm a single parent. I've raised her alone. She's 17. We always had a pretty close relationship, always seemed to be pretty good. And of course, now with the teenage years, I believe, you know, there's a lot of things changing, her wanting to go her more of her own way, I'm sure. However, she has probably been the past maybe year or less that she is extremely angry all the time.
Over the past year, not before that?
I don't think before that, no. I want to say it's been, like, really, really bad maybe the past year. And primarily at me. I seem to be the object of her anger. At least that's where she's taking it out at. I did get her to go to counseling, and she went for a little while, and I did see some improvement at home with her and her attitude. And then she stopped going and wouldn't go anymore. I went to the counselor to find out, you know, what I could do, and basically I think they just got to a point where she wasn't going to delve any further into whatever, you know, her father was never really part of her life, and I think she just wasn't going to go any further into whatever she had feelings to uncover.
I'm sorry, I don't. You mean the therapist wouldn't talk with you anymore about what had been?
No, my daughter would not talk.
I see. Okay.
She was done. So she won't go any longer.
That's a shame.
I can't get her to go anymore. And at 17, you really can't. I can't drag her there and force her to go. I've done a lot of suggesting and.
Like what? What kind of suggesting? What do you mean?
Oh, that I love her and that I think she's unhappy. I think she could benefit from it. And, you know, and I get
why don't you go to therapy? I think you need to go. I think
she says that.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That gives you a
need to fix me.
Nancy, that gives you a clue. That gives you a clue as to what's going on
right.
with her, at least from my point of view. And that is, and this takes, this is not easy for you to do. But you asked about, well, what are you unhappy about yourself? That's a question that she will not answer, in my judgment, my experience. But the question that you could ask her, and this is difficult, what don't you like about me? Because I have seen this time and time again, that with adolescent girls, even older than that, I don't want to be like you. And they point...
I get that a lot.
Okay, so she's already... Well, look, we haven't rehearsed
this. Dr. Aronoff's really good.
We haven't rehearsed this ahead of time. I'm telling you that from my experience... That's what needs to be done. And at some point, she has to turn to a sense of herself independent of you and not focus on you as the cause of all her problems and of having hexed her, put a hex on her to become
and
like she's become.
Exactly what I think is going on, that she is the way she is because of me.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you something. Without knowing her and just knowing you for about 30 seconds, I think that that is what, at least a part of what's going on, or is certainly a part of what needs to be dealt with. Now, the question is how to do that. And and it's a little bit difficult with a 17-year-old because really the impetus has to come from her,
right.
And it's not going to come from her right now. Betsy, what
but, you
some
know,
thoughts about
this? But, you know, this is very interesting. And if she's seeing herself in you and she feels she's being like you and I am what I am because of you and she's able to even talk to you about what she doesn't like about you, you could take the strategy of, I hear you, and how about if we went and talked to someone together, or I go for half the time and you go for half the time, so she sees that you are going. You see what happens...
And listening to her.
Exactly. What happens for these adolescents is the mother is the easiest person to attack. So as she develops more of her own self, and a happier self, she just won't have to attack you. And even if she thinks she's like you, it'll be bearable. But right now, when she's not happy, she has nothing to do but attack you. And trust me, it will wear you down.
For some future show, you all may want to discuss with us about, is that a genuine, general, universal fear of women? I don't want to become like my mother.
It's going to be in my book.
Oh,
there okay. we go.
All right.
But
I have suggested the therapy and going with her and gone separately. We have done all that. And
what happens?
You know, we did. Well, I went separately. She went separately, and then she just refused to go anymore.
Well, I guess that's a shame.
Yeah, and I think what I mostly wanted to know was how to deal with the negativity from her all the time about, you know, I am, you know, all the pointing out of all my bad traits and, you know, you're selfish.
Nancy, I do mean to cut you off. Here's the issue. That's a symptom. That's not the problem. That's how she's manifesting her disquiet about herself. This is not an answer to your question, which is a very valid question. How do we get her to engage and deal with this more specifically? But I don't know. You know, in a sense, what you're going to have to do is, I know you feel like that, dear, but there's something more going on. And until you start to look at that inside yourself, I'm sorry to say this, I will address myself. And maybe that's what you have to do. Maybe you have to see somebody. Not for her sake.
She's
not,
doing that.
But, and to continue to do that.
Right.
And just to say time and time again, you know, I'm doing it. You're standing still.
I think her seeing you continue to go actually gives you more leverage than to say, I'm learning a lot of things about myself that I didn't know and may even be able to help you and I. I'm also learning that I can say no to you, that you can't be this negative to me. or rude, but you don't want her to see your therapy as against her. You have to be very careful. You want to see her to see the therapy as supportive of you guys as a unit and supportive of her adolescent confusion.
It's helpful for me.
And, right.
You know, this is what I'm learning. And by example, you can't you're absolutely right, Nancy. You can't make her do it.
Right.
But you can set an example, and maybe, God willing, she will follow the example.
Oh, okay. I can definitely do that. And your comment about her, you know, the being afraid to stand up to her.
Yes. Yeah.
How constantly disrespectful and rude. That's where I'm at right now. I'm afraid I'm on eggshells all the time. And
you know, you can say until you are really, you know, playing 50-50 here and we're both getting help, you do not have the right to treat me like this. It's just not okay. And
with all due respect, and I love you at the same time. You got to
say that. Exactly. I love you very much. You are the center of my life. Absolutely. I'll do anything for you. But to be this rude and this hurtful and this disrespectful to me is simply not okay.
All right.
And I love you.
All right, Nancy.
Thank you.
Yeah, give it a shot. This is not easy, but
no, it's not.
Thank you for the call. 1-877-698-3627. You know, Betsy, one of the most important things in any kind of interaction, adversity, against an adversarial, whatever else, is respect.
Absolutely.
You mentioned respect. The most important thing, if you want to engage somebody and not just to blow them off the surface of this planet, respect is a key ingredient.
I could not agree more.
Let's go to Margaret from Minnesota. Margaret, you're on the air.
Margaret from Minnesota.
Hello.
Hello, Margaret. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Margaret.
My call is about my granddaughter, who's 6 years old, and she's very similar to the teenager that you were talking about a half an hour ago that is kind of controlling at home and wants to kind of bully people. And then when she gets out in a situation, she doesn't know what to do, and it turns into a behavioral problem.
Right. Very shy, very retiring, not able to assert herself.
Example, just going to the dentist, the first time she went, it took two dentists out there, and they didn't even get her to open her mouth.
And, really?
So she went again yesterday, and we decided I would bring her and to see if that changed the situation. And evidently, she'd been talking about for 2 months about going to the dentist. She was all excited. She could hardly wait for the day. We get there, no problem at all. And then when it was time to go in, she started clamming up. Mm. So we started talking, finally got her in there, convinced her to finally open her mouth. After about 1 minute, she shut it, started gagging, jumped out of the chair, and there was no way she was going to have any part of it again.
That's a very interesting kind of. She's 6 years old, is that?
Yeah.
First of all, you said two things that are sort of took me back. None. First one, that she was afraid to open her mouth, which suggests some sort of sensitivity or fear that really needs to be identified. And sometimes, particularly even with a six-year-old, that can be helped by play therapy, that is, by using surrogates, dolls and so forth, having a child, a young child, act out, you know, being the dentist. Because
that's right.
And trying to explore, and what's the problem that this particular doll has with, you know, opening his or her mouth or whatever. That's one thing that struck me. But the other thing that struck me was you said she was excited about going to the dentist. Who in the world is excited about going to the dentist?
Well, actually, after the first visit, they got home, and she was the dentist, and then her mother was the patient, and she made her, and they played it.
So excellent. Now, but that needs to be played out, and maybe not so much with her mother, which is a loaded issue, but maybe with dolls, with, you know, maybe the mother playing with it, but having it removed one step from a real human being to a couple of dolls, one a dentist, one a patient, whatever else. To see where it goes, and you allow that person to play it out, the child to play it out.
Does the same thing happen at the pediatrician? Does she run around the office before an injection, for example?
Yes, exactly. Yes, she's been doing that since day one.
And has she developed like a needle phobia? Does it take an hour to give her her tetanus shot, for example? Yeah. Okay. So then I think that, that Michael's point about play therapy and using, you know, the medical kits and the dental kits and who's the doctor and who's the dentist and who's the patient and where's the nurse is very important, because it sounds like she has a generalized fear of the dentist and the doctor. Now, does this fear get played out in going to kindergarten or first grade or in her daily responsibilities as well, or only in the doctor's office?
No, it comes out in a lot of other things. I think it comes out, though, as, you know, a behavioral problem when they're in public, and she responds to that. You know, just like at the dentist, you know, she was actually kind of grinning, which I think was just part of her response of being so scared. And the dentist just kind of, and this was a pediatric dentist, just kind of said, well, she obviously thinks this is funny. I'm not playing this game, you know. And I know my my granddaughter was just petrified. And when we got out in the car and I was able to talk to her, and I said, well, what happened? She said, well, you know, a voice told me I didn't want to be there anymore. So I think it was just she got scared, you know.
This is a situation, so. I think, this is a situation where I think, you know, I mean, we suggest therapy over the This
right.
is the start of a potential phobia or phobic
Absolutely.
Kind of reaction.
I would
and
agree.
I think really needs to be dealt with professionally with somebody who is familiar with the play therapy as an exploratory technique
right.
for understanding with the child about what's going on. It's too widespread with your granddaughter. I think that you're absolutely right, Margaret, to be concerned
yes,
about this.
Absolutely.
I think that professional intervention you know, I'm not sounding an alarm. I'm just saying that you're anticipating something that really should be addressed.
And this is why
yeah.
you're seeing the bullying, controlling behavior at home, because she can't
yeah.
control
yeah.
the environment well at all right now. So
she's extremely smart, and she came out screaming from day one. And my daughter actually didn't take her a lot of places for many years because it was just nothing. Everything was a challenge and a temper tantrum, and you know, and she's come a long way that way.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it,
you know. Yeah. Margaret, I think you have the ammunition now
Absolutely.
To go to your daughter and say this really should not be overlooked at
right.
this point.
Okay.
It's too widespread.
Okay,
good luck,
okay.
Margaret.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Margaret. Thank you for the call. Well, you know what? I'm sorry to leave the rest of you hanging, but we're out of time. And, you know, Betsy, we're going to have to do this again.
That would be my pleasure.
This is, and mine as well. Not,
okay.
not just yours, mine as well.
Great.
This has been The Psychiatry Show. I'm Dr. Michael Aronoff. My guest in studio is Dr. Betsy Sher-Levy. You're working on a new book?
I am working on a book, no name to divulge yet, about young women in transition and their views of their mother. And I'm very excited about it. Might take a while, but I'm very excited about
it. I'm working on a book myself. No title to be revealed as yet, but we'll talk about it in the
Maybe
future.
Maybe we can sit and write together.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
All right. Or at least talk about the troubles and the challenges of writing.
And there are plenty of those.
Yeah.
It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you as well. So you've been listening to The Psychiatry Show. I'll be back next time, in 2 weeks, actually, with you. Our number here for your future reference is 1-877-698-3627. And as always, we enjoy dealing with these kinds of issues, as you can hear, very challenging issues, but important for all of us, and from which we all learn about how we can deal with various kinds of situations that come up that need to be dealt with, that are challenging, but that are solvable. And that's what our purpose is. So be with you next time.
Good luck, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.